Welcome to Punch Card Investing, a weekly show dedicated to all things value investing. Whether it be analyzing companies, pitching ideas, or discussing moves by the best investors in the world, we're trying to get one step closer to punching an investment off of our cards. Let's get started.
Thank you, Intro Man. Happy St. Patrick's Day, or it's probably the one day in the future for our friend Chris here, or I keep calling you, I need to call you Frank. Frank. For Frank and Tom and Karin, only right now it's 5 a.m. his time. He's he's traveling, I'm told, to Abu Dhabi. This daylight savings, like 2 weeks we have right here, is a total mess. So I don't know how this is going to be once we're back to once you guys down under switch your daylight savings, because Karin doesn't. So like it's going to be a mess. So apologies to anyone from wherever you're listening from. It's going to be a bit of a mess for scheduling. So please forgive us. It's hard coordinating all these worldwide time zones, but we try our best. Now it's a best idea. Speaking of best, we're trying to do our best with our best ideas, which we try to do every quarter, and we have been doing every quarter ever since we started this show. Hey, give me your best ideas right now. Coming from that Charlie Munger quote that we like to use as the sort of linchpin for this series. I'm trying to pitch an idea. Best does not mean good. Best just means best of the worst, potentially. So we will try our best to give you our best ideas. Before we do that, though, please check out all those great links in the description below and let us know let us know where you're listening from. It's been a while since we've done that, but definitely leave a comment, or if you're in the chat right now live, let us know where you're listening from. We do have a very worldwide audience, which is pretty cool. Always very cool just to get all the different perspectives from wherever you're from. So please let us know where you're at. Otherwise, check out all those great links in the description. Subscribe, like, and comment again. It all helps. So how you guys doing? It's been a festive day for you, Brad, here. It's late on this St. Patrick's Day night.
Yeah, I haven't had my green beer yet. I'm not sure what's going on. I need to bust that out, but
I did pull out my, it's not quite green. It's mint polo. So, you know, I'm very festive today, clearly.
Yeah. I've got like a teal shirt on. It's not quite cutting it for green, but I don't have much Irish in me. So
I was telling Frank when he came on, before he changed his lighting, his beard looked extra red today. And I thought it might've been, you know, sign of the times.
It's not a very popular celebration over in Australia. I actually luckily wore green. It wasn't on purpose. So I didn't even realize St. Patrick's was happening. It kind of gets a catching over here, and some people would do tiny celebrations, but a very small Irish community over here, even though a lot of us probably come from Ireland at some point in time. But yeah, not a big day over here.
Well, you know, it's a big day of luck, right? The luck of the Irish. We got any lucky ideas here? Is that what we're going to call this?
Well, first,
give me your luckiest idea right now.
Jack, where you used to live in Chicago, I think I remember, didn't they like dye the rivers green? Do they still dye the river green?
It's very strange because, you know, they pretend to be very big on environmentalism there, yet then they pour like, you know, thousands of gallons of dye or however much they got to dye the river bright green. So I don't know how that works. They claim it's environmentally fine, but it's a little bit suspect because it is a bright green. They dye it. It's an interesting thing, but yeah, a lot of Irish folks in
Skittles. Chicago. Skittles are all dyed too, right? So how bad can it really be?
Yeah, that's just the rainbow after all. The rainbow. It's all natural. Right. But yeah, it's definitely a giant Irish American population up there. So yeah, it's a good time. If you're into that sort of thing. Right. So, I don't know how do we get this going? Tom will be joining us shortly, or allegedly will be joining us shortly. And, we could try to get four best ideas in here. Does anyone want to lead off?
Well, I want to throw this out there real quick. In the chat, you guys give us your best idea as well. I'm very curious to see what people are thinking about these days. Hopefully a number of banks in there. You know, that seems to be a hot topic right now.
It's been a volatile market. So there's been a lot of price movements in lots of stocks right now, especially in the last month. But I mean, all year, I mean, you had the giant run-up in January that was followed by a pretty significant sell-off in February. And now we're getting whatever's going on in March. Just lots of movements going on.
Yeah.
Anyone, are you guys adding to existing holdings at all, or trimming, holding, selling?
I've been fairly inactive. A bit of cash pile up happening slowly, so I might maybe rebalance the portfolio. But no major changes happening in the portfolio. I'm assuming this kind of period lasts a while, so there could be some opportunities where I can average down on some of my positions. But I'm trying to remain fairly active. How about you guys?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I've really been focused on real estate locally here in Asheville. So I'm not even really paying attention to the stock market. I guess there's been a lot of excitement going on, which is fun. But just a few minutes ago, I decided to pull a screen for public companies within 10% of their 52-week lows, just to kind of get a sense, you know, are there any kind of compounders in here, you know, companies that I think of as these long-term compounders. Right away, I see United Health Group, Home Depot, Danaher, right? These are all within a couple percent of their 52-week low. Now, keep in mind, obviously, just because they're close to the 52-week low does not mean they're cheap. It just means they're cheaper than they have been in the last year, I mean, roughly speaking. So you got to be careful with that. But it's always interesting to look at that list, which companies are trading very close to those 52-week lows. And I'm certainly not used to seeing those companies on the list. Also, Bank of America. Okay, that's another one that's on there. So just something I pulled a few minutes ago.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of banks. Yeah. Especially right now. Sure. If you've been looking for a time to get into banking, I suppose this might be a weirdly great one for someone looking for a deal. Then again, the sell-off isn't without any reason. Given what we've been seeing, we talked about it last week with the Silicon Valley situation, which, you know, you could call it solved, but a lot of the systemic issues are clearly there.
Well, it's not solved for investors.
Right? Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
At least the investors who weren't able to kind of front run the news and sell off before something insider trading, maybe. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, are any of you guys looking at banks right now? I know Hingham has been floated around here a number of times. Is that something, Frank?
Can you pull up the action for that, Jack? I'm just curious what it looks like.
Idea.
I actually almost come in to pitch Ally Financial today, which I think is interesting in the sense that it might have – that's not the one I'm going to pitch. I kind of passed on the idea just because I don't understand the company too well. But I've heard a few interesting pitches about it, and I think this period it's probably the cheapest it'll be for – or cheapest it's been for a long time. And I think it's speculation, of course, but with Berkshire's 10% position in the company – it seems like they might have a bit of a safety net or a backup plan if things really hit the fan, but that is definitely speculation. But yeah,
$7 billion market cap, and that's a 50% drop in the last year, and just in the past 3 months, only a 5% drop in the last 3 months, but it did have a run up in January.
A lot of their cash flow does go towards tax, which makes the Ally story kind of seem a little bit more interesting than it did to me in the past. It still has a problem where I don't know how excited I am about car loans in general.
Yep.
Right. But yeah, if you believed in the thesis 6 to 12 months ago, this price should make that more attractive considering the buyback is the story. So as long as that continues at the rates that they expected to, then this could get interesting. And again, you do maybe have to believe that they could get the from Berkshire if necessary.
What's the latest on how much cash they're ready to put towards buybacks? Do you guys know that?
No, I don't know. I had.
Okay, Berkshire owns 10% of Ally. Wow.
It'd be pretty, bold to be doing buybacks immediately, like right this second. Even though a lot of banks are currently raising money, trying to shore up the balance sheet,
stay liquid.
You know? Yes. But yeah, the shares outstanding have been dropping pretty significantly over the past few years.
There's that comment that just popped up from Rago saying the flight stories is good entertainment. Have you guys seen that thread floating around on Twitter to track all the private jets flying in and out of Omaha? And a lot of areas where small banks have been, there's been 12 to something all flew in on the same day.
No, I didn't.
So they're speculating that Berkshire is offering some kind of bailout to some of these regional banks. It is fun to think about. And obviously, I have no idea how many private jets are kind of entering Omaha on a daily basis, but it seems sense.
And I mean, it would make sense. I mean, Janet Yellen, the Secretary of the Treasury, I think yesterday said the quiet part out loud and said that if you don't pose systemic risk, you don't get a bailout, pretty much, in not very uncertain terms. So if you want to go get a bailout, you got to go find a big buyer. I wonder how much consolidation, even further than what we've seen over the past few decades, we'll see in the next few years. It's going to be a sort of catalyst for it.
I just want to point out, Daniel also mentioned Norbert Liu is in Ally Financial as well. So, yeah, car loans.
Science of heating. You can't be scared of auto loans, though. That's the thing.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have been scared of the auto industry in general for obvious reasons. Obvious, is that the right word? For four reasons in the past year or two.
I guess it's all about price, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or really, in the case of loans, just transaction volume, in addition to price. If people are tightening, trying to look for, cheaper cash cars potentially, more so than before, that's a problem for Ally. Or if they have to repossess, of course, that's an even bigger problem. That's where price would definitely make more of a difference.
If anyone is Alex, I'm blanking his last name, but from Science of Hitting, has done a lot of good writing about Ally, both on Twitter and his Substack as well. It's a very interesting company. And he kind of, one of the comments I heard him make was something along the lines of, people don't default on their cars. It's like kind of the last thing behind the house to let go. I don't know how much I buy into that.
I've never heard of that. Is there good data on that?
Well, I'm sure he wouldn't have said it for no reason. He would have had some kind of data to it, I would assume, knowing the quality of his work usually. But yeah, I don't know how I enter that exactly. But overall, he covers the company really well, whether that statement's true or not.
So you remind me, Frank, of something that happened recently. I was golfing and I teed off, and it was a terrible shot, right? It went way left, and there was a house there. And I heard my ball hit the house. And there's a guy came out. He was like, I could hear him talking because I was walking down the fairway. And he was like, yeah, I don't care if they hit the house. I just don't want them to hit my truck. So I was like, yeah, people really care, some people, about their vehicles. So it just reminded me of that.
To be fair, replacing a piece of siding, if you even need to replace it at all, it's a little bit easier than, fair, a windshield or something.
Yeah.
But yeah. People are very prideful. I mean, being in Texas now, very prideful about their trucks. So, yes, so that's Texas, for sure.
Yeah, Texas and in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And I guess depending where you live too, having a car or a vehicle of some kind, it really is dependent upon your livelihood and being able to work. I know if you live in a city with good transport, that might not be the case. But for most people, I would argue, in the world, you really do need, if you want to stay afloat in general, you need the car in the first place.
Well, certainly in the US, that, like, in very few cities can you really get away without some sort of car. Well, what I've actually been doing. So, a quick side tangent on transit in Houston. So, Houston has like no transit at all. There's like a small little metro, like streetcar train system of sorts, like in the immediate downtown. But to get there, you have to drive. They have a bus system, which is the closest thing you can do. But I've been getting away with my wife and I splitting a car. She takes it most of the time. And I've actually been Ubering around the few times I need to go anywhere, like downtown. And then occasionally I'll take the car from her because she's real close to, she works real close to our house. So I've been like pushing myself to like not have a car of my own in Houston and just basically riding other people's cars with Uber. And then the bus system is actually all right too. It's a much better than Chicago smell wise. So, so it hasn't been too bad, but it's been an experiment. I'll be caving and buying a car this year, but I've been like, I just would rather have the cash, use it to pay down debt. I'll just wait, keep waiting. And in a lot of cases, if I'm only driving downtown, like once or twice a week, it doesn't really make sense to own one. Just take an Uber or hop on the bus. So the joke with the buses here is to take the bus, you have to go to a gigantic park and ride lot. So you need to drive your car to the bus to then take the bus downtown and skip all the traffic. Because it's only like 20 minutes, 25 minutes on the bus. And a bunch of guys like me on their laptops working. It's just a very bizarre system here. But versus, you know, 45 to 50 minutes if you drove yourself.
Wait, is that because of like a carpool lane?
Yeah, you take the HOV lane, which it's just amazing that like everyone is driving alone in their, you know, 2-ton vehicle on sitting in traffic every day. It's nauseating here. I'm sure a lot like large swaths of California. It's very similar.
Yeah.
I've been trying to like, you know, I don't want to drive because driving is, I like to think, is a waste of time. So anything I can do to not drive, it's great. Coming from Chicago, you could take the train all the time. So that was like a, you know, it had its faults, but it was otherwise a luxury just to have that. But that was a big transit tangent. Any other thoughts on transit and cars before we move on from Ally? So take that as a no.
No,
but Frank, what you said Ally wasn't the idea. So what was the idea? We were going to
give us your idea, Frank.
So my idea, and I don't know about best idea. In full transparency, I don't own this. It's just one that's kind of hit my radar over the past couple of weeks. I'm paying attention to it. It's interesting, but I don't know if I could get there at the end. But the idea is British American Tobacco, BTI is the ticker. Pull it up. Of the kind of big three tobacco companies, or the major companies around tobacco companies around the globe, it is the cheapest on any multiple you look at. It's about 30% cheaper than the others, and partly that's because they do have more debt. Maybe the core there, they are transitioning to kind of vapes and everything slower than the others have, so there is reason for it to be a little bit cheaper. But the interesting part to me is that it pays around an 8% dividend yield.
Wow.
So it's not, I guess their shareholder base is pretty dependent on those dividends. So it's unlikely that they go away. They got in some serious trouble, which isn't out of the question, I guess, with the tobacco industry. It's going through significant change, particularly as people kind of move towards the non-combustibles, really big trend.
I want to say British American Tobacco is like one of the best performing stocks of the past like very long period of time. I want to say they're like top five for sure, which, you know, no one would ever think of.
Yeah, if you include that dividend, I guess their returns would be pretty impressive. But yeah, I guess the interest would come that 7 to 8% kind of dividend yield. With the buybacks, your earnings per share would be growing somewhere around, I'd say mid or digits. 5% might be kind of the safe mark. Some estimates closer to 7 to 8%. In recent years, it's been a little bit lower, maybe around 4%. So you kind of get, let's call it 5 on top of your 8% dividend yield. And you're looking at a reasonable return, or a pretty good return in all honesty, and a possible multiplication if they continue to kind of switch to non-combustible as well, or you just get more investors coming through that want to collect a dividend yield of an uncertain market where this company has some kind of pricing power. Of course, there's the kind of decline in cigarette sales around the globe, kind of outpaced by their pricing. So you still get some growth in there as well. But yeah, I wouldn't rely on a multiple re-rate. They're probably deservingly cheaper, particularly debt, than Altria
But look at the free cash flow chart. Isn't this wild?
What happened in 2018?
It must have made an acquisition, I'd have to guess.
Yeah, not sure. I haven't followed it too closely.
I'd have a feeling they probably got involved with like something with vapes and all that stuff. I had to guess, but I'm no expert. But it's just kind of amazing, like just the consistent free cash flow for so long. So you could get the appeal there if you just want something theoretically stable. But yeah, there are systemic risks like you're getting at.
Yeah, and I think 20% of the global population are still smokers, which was surprisingly high.
Yeah, that sounds high.
I'm guessing in the Western world that number's a fair bit lower. I think that would be brought up by a lot of the kind of developing markets, but that's speculation. Maybe the US is high as well. I'm sure that will go down slightly. It might be balanced out by both pricing power and kind of, and I guess any other kind of tobacco-like trend that comes along. These big players in the tobacco industry will move along with any trend, and they kind of have to adapt pretty fast. It's unlikely that they completely fail because they hold on to just cigarette sales. They do have that cash flow to be flexible, I guess. So I think the downside with the current multiples, I don't think it can get too much cheaper on a multiple basis. Historically, they're cheaper than 08, and the cheapest they've been on a multiple basis in 20 years or so, give or take.
It's an $80 billion market cap. That doesn't sound like a Frank pick to me.
I did see some comments of some smaller kind of players being thrown in the chat, and I just haven't looked at them is the answer to that, really. When it comes to these type of investments, I'm probably more interested in the larger companies, considering a lot of what it would be is the dividend that I'm interested in. And it would be, I personally would think of it as a cash alternative in some way. It wouldn't be a long-term investment where if a better idea come along, it would be a quick way to cycle out from a tobacco company into a new idea pretty happily. It's just that nice yield that seems relatively safe. And in a market like this, I guess it's somewhat of an inflation hedge. They have really good power. They've made it through a lot of recessions before. Yeah, pretty boring old stock, low kind of return, but appealing in a market like this.
Yeah, how has it done in this year, actually? Year to date, down 10%. I'm sure you probably have a dividend mixed in there somewhere, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Alexander mentioned in the comments, British American was the top performing stock from the Nifty 50. Chris Bloomstrand did a study in his latest annual letter. I thought it was Philip Morris, but yeah, could have been British American Tobacco.
I think it was at some point.
15% a year for 50 some years.
Yeah, it's really just a longevity.
Yeah,
does it.
It's a longevity story.
Yeah, Philip Morris, I think, has slightly better returns. And I think it was them that Altria as well. Maybe I'm wrong on that. They're all interesting companies historically, and depending on the firm, they are interesting. And even with like, it's now a very long-term trend that tobacco kind of sales are declining, and they've still managed to give investors pretty good returns considering the dividend and buybacks and things happening. So I guess the other thing you could throw in there is depends basically want to invest if that's the type of investor you are. I don't see a major problem with holding a tobacco company personally, but I know probably some people think about that as well.
I'm no expert on that field.
You didn't do your homework.
What's that?
You didn't do your homework on
No.
British American Tobacco.
I didn't do any sampling. No. Boots on the ground research.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. That was not one I would have expected from the one and only Frank.
Yeah. Keeping us on our toes. Well, it sounds like I may have impacted you with my tweets talking about market cap and returns, Frank. So that's good to see.
Wise sage Brad.
He doesn't know. Brad's been attacking me personally on Twitter for a while now. He just forgets to tag me. That's the only thing. He'll attack me and leave me out of the tag.
Yep. I can't stand to face you head first.
How many followers are you guys at? You guys are more active than I am.
31,000, I think I'm sitting at. Right.
Impressive.
Roughly, yeah, I think.
And Brad at 20. Look at that. Look at you guys.
Chugging along.
I've got one.
You have one.
I'm pretty sure they're all Frank's. He shouted me out like a week ago.
Your
some
mom's
ago.
Following you. That's nice, Jack.
If you're in the chat, go and follow at Jack
yeah,
Duffley
yeah.
on Twitter.
Follow me.
And make sure you heckle him.
Make me feel better.
Should we look at some of these in the chat here? As we eagerly await Tom's presence.
Sure. Well, Brad, are you looking at anything right now?
No. Well, I'm looking at real estate.
Not a thing. Real estate. Tell us. Tell us more.
I'm looking to buy like a farm, basically. 40, 50 acres to
Nashville?
Yeah, do some homesteading. Probably like 30 minutes outside of Asheville.
Back to the real estate roots.
Roots.
You could call them that.
Yeah. Back to the land. I want my kids to grow up, you know, milking cows, collecting eggs from the chickens.
For real? Like full on homesteading?
Yeah. Maybe not cows, maybe goats. But that's the lifestyle I'm looking for.
So would that just be like for your own sort of long-term house? I know you mentioned a while back on our like real estate episode we did that you wanted to stay in this one kind of short-term that you just bought. So is that what it'd be for first, or would it be like investment first? You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah. I'm kind of looking at them in parallel. So buy the farm, set up the homestead. Mm-hmm. That's for living, and then maybe getting an Airbnb or two on a smaller, like a mini farm kind of setup.
Sure.
So, yeah, that's what we're looking for. Prices still aren't aligned with where mortgage rates are.
Yeah, rates have climbed quite a bit. Yeah, prices are mostly flat. So just pain. pain. I guess they print more dollars each day, even though they say they're not. They print more dollars each day, so you got that pushing it up.
Yep,
or I should say suspending it in midair. The Wile E. Coyote thing.
Yeah, Frank. Question for you: have you looked at The Joint? Small cap, long runway, profitable. It's in Connor Haley's portfolio.
No, other than the ticker floating across my radar, I've never looked at it.
It must be like chiropractic offices, I'm guessing.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was not my first thought.
Oh.
Given what we were just discussing.
Cannabis, right? Cannabis.
chiropractic clinics, $200 million market cap.
Yeah.
See, now this is more a Frank's alley, right?
Absolutely.
Chiropractor roll-up strategy, $200 million market cap, right?
Is that what they are? They are roll-up, 700 locations.
But buying up chiropractic clinics.
Right.
It says develops.
Oh, develops, okay. So maybe it's like a franchise kind of model.
It doesn't mention roll-ups.
Yeah, maybe
but if I had to guess, at 700 locations, there's probably something involved with acquisitions. But knowing nothing about the company, don't quote me.
What's their growth been like? Can you pull up their income statement or something?
Top line has been growing rapidly. Becca, yeah.
That's wild. What does that mean, percentages?
a lot for going back to 2010.
A whole lot.
Did they just start in 2010 then? Then they have barely any revenue? Yeah, but if we go back to 16, that's going from 20 million to 100 million in the last 6 years or so. Or that's 7 years, right?
Can you scroll down and look at their kind of profitability and other metrics? Yeah.
So that's top line.
Wow.
90% gross margins? Hello? Yeah.
Something going on here.
Maybe it must be a franchise model, like you're saying.
Yeah.
I don't know how else you could use margins like that.
And then very low margins on the bottom line. Yeah. They're kind of unpredictable, at least.
Yeah.
I expect some dilution. They're not really diluting shares either, which is interesting.
Debt, maybe?
Yeah, what kind of debt do they have?
Are they doing the Domino's model? Or you just blow up the debt? I went right by it. Long-term debt? No. Yeah, no. Debt's very manageable.
Pull out the cash flow statement.
Yeah.
Are they funding it all through free cash flow? That's interesting.
Yeah. Free cash flow seems very low for what it is.
So what are they at?
The 200 million market cap? 4 to 8 million over the last few years in free cash flow.
So what are they, 40 times free cash flow roughly?
What are we missing here? Something seems weird.
Well, if it's a franchise model, right, they're not bringing the capital.
Yeah. If that's what it is.
Well, yeah, but even so, you know, you got, what did we say it was? 100 million in top line revenue. Like, where's it all going? Is this pure acquisitions then? All right, let me go back to cash flows.
Well, if it's all coming from franchises, then they see very little of the cash flow, particularly early on. But yeah, I'm assuming that's what they're doing. And I would guess that it's probably a very fragmented industry. A lot of these things would be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have no idea what the industry kind of setup would be, but that would be pretty important, I think, too. I don't know the kind of trends of what do I even call that? Chiropracting. yeah, it kind of seems like a outdated business somewhat. Maybe I'm naive to that. I couldn't imagine it's growing.
I would argue it's kind of viral, trendy, than ever. I mean, I get chiropractor like random videos like recommended sometimes, like dang. it seems like it's trendy enough to get millions and millions of views now. So I don't know what the whole industry looks like, but I can't imagine it's shrinking too much.
I'm just looking at a Value Investors Club right up from 2020.
Looks like a franchise.
Yeah.
Yeah, it operates through, it says direct ownership, management arrangements, franchising, and regional developers. So I don't know how many locations they have.
546 total clinics in 33 states.
This is 700 as of March.
Well, this is 3 years old.
I mean, they added another 150 after that. Because that's as of March 1, so it might even be more now. It's March 1 of 2022, so it might be 800 or 900 now, for all we know.
You guys, we missed a super chat.
Oh, yes. Jason in the house says a little walking around SRG bag holders get back on their feet. I thought today might be a decent day to do an SRG episode. We'll have to do one at some point because there's a lot of drama going on right now. Unexpected drama. But yeah.
We'll have to let Tom tackle that one, I think.
Yes. Tom can lead the way.
Yeah.
But yeah, that does seem interesting from the surface level, whoever brought up that joint company. That was, it does seem something that I'd be interested in. I would have to do a lot more work to give any serious feedback on it there.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions to be answered, but interesting idea.
I'm guessing neither of you have gone to a chiropractor before.
I've wanted to for a while, but I haven't.
Okay.
I do want to try once.
I don't know if it's a common opinion, but I'm pretty skeptical of chiropractors in general.
Yep.
I don't know.
Not medical advice here, but I think there's a lot of like kind of voodoo magic to it where it's like,
oh boy.
You do this, you can, lose weight and when it goes beyond just like, oh, it's just like a cool massage, basically. I think that's fine. But I think that there's some outlandish claims that are made sometimes about what it can do.
Jack, we have at least three chiropractors in the chat right now. So this is going to get real interesting.
Yeah, right. Exactly. We got someone says it's fake science. Like,
oh boy.
I just see it as like an advanced massage for the most part. As long as they're not doing that thing where they like rip your head off or whatever they do. not that one, but the one where they like they basically like pull you like from your neck. Like
it and doesn't the twisted look back safe. One. I don't know. None of that sits well with me.
That one doesn't look very fun. Take a back crack though. That sounds fine. I think it's all the leaning forward, looking at screens all day. Like, I got to reset every now and then. I've never actually done it. Have you, Brad?
No.
You're in the Bay Area. Surely you would have tried once.
No, there's a lot more crazy things to do in the Bay Area than a chiropractor.
That's tame out there.
Yes, very tame.
That's fair.
I wanted to bring up one of the comments here. Someone asked, did anything catch my eye from Chris Meyer's list of holdings? Have you guys looked at those at all? I put a tweet out not too long ago. It was cool. I guessed 9 out of 10. And then he actually said which one was wrong in a tweet and then said which one I was missing. So it was great. So we know all 10 positions.
Oh, I missed the correction because I saw the video where you were kind of piecing it together. Was Domino's the wrong one?
Yes, Domino's was the wrong one.
Yep.
Yeah.
It did seem kind of like a weird one.
There was a Polish company that replaced Domino's in the list.
That was the smaller cap company too, wasn't it?
Well, it was a mid cap.
Right.
I think like a food manufacturer or something. But yeah,
do you want to pull up the tweet so we can have a look?
Yeah.
Through some of the names.
I could probably find it fastest and I can just...
I'm trying to find it.
I've been tweeting way too much, so it's going to be hard to find.
Oh, you pinned it.
Oh, I did? Good. Perfect. Yeah,
easy money. All right, here it is.
Yeah. Yeah, just click on that. It'll blow up.
So via at @bcalner on Twitter. Ooh. Chris Meyer's portfolio, Constellation Software, Heiko Corp, Brown & Brown, Old Dominion, Lifeco.
Maybe.
Lifeco. What is Technion?
So Technion is by far his smallest, market cap holding.
Copart, Topicus, Evolution, and Dino Polska.
Yep. Have you spent any time, Frank, on Technion?
Yeah, so before I stop the newsletter, I have like a full write-up essentially sitting there on Technion with maybe a little bit of work to finish it off and maybe probably needs a bit of updating now. But it's one I looked at pretty closely. It is an interesting company, very focused, almost maybe too focused on acquisitions. I remember going through some of their presentations, the amount of times they mention acquisitions is, depending on your outlook, either great or terrifying. But it's an interesting company with really great management, high insider ownership, say and do all the right things, rolling up kind of cheap industrial companies in Europe. Yeah, it's definitely interesting. They don't overpay for companies. They're not looking for too much growth within these companies. They're kind of buying boring, stable, cash flow positive businesses. And they keep doing the same thing over and over and expect they can keep up the growth rates. They predict roughly around, or they say they want to double EPS every 5 years. So that works out to be about a 15% CAGR or so, which they constantly say isn't linear. They don't want 15% each year, but they do want to double every five.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke with the CXO, I think he calls himself, Daniel Zhang, I want to say, Daniel someone. And he was a really smart dude. He's got a good book out there too. And he pretty much gave me every answer I wanted just through Twitter DMs and was pretty helpful. So he seems like a really smart guy, saying and doing all the right things. So it's an interesting company. There's a bit of a language barrier in there with some of their presentations that come out in Swedish. So you have to do a lot of Google translating and things get lost sometimes. But it's definitely interesting. It's sat on the top of my watch list for a while. Probably need to revisit it soon, I think.
Okay.
How about you, Brad?
No, I haven't. I haven't spent time on it. But, you know, I got to say, one of the things that turned me off, I forget what I was listening to. It might have been like an investor day or something. But just the compounder bro lingo that they, I mean, it's just like.
Compounder bro lingo? Is that a term of art?
It gave me a red flag in terms of, it seemed like they were almost trying too hard to say all the right buzzwords around, you know, these long-term compounders.
Did they mention AI at any point?
I don't think so.
So they're very like, they're copying, well, Lifeco is a good example of exactly who they're copying. The other kind of Swedish serial acquirers that have been very successful over the past, well, a while now, but at least the past two decades or so. So they've really mimicked that decentralized serial acquirer model,
mm-hmm.
And they're hyper-focused on doing it. So they do say all the buzzwords, but it seems at least from a distance that they're living by their word and doing all of those things as well. So
yeah,
if that's a kind of philosophy you think works, then that would be a company to pay attention to.
Cool.
Any other takeaways from the list?
Well, people are mentioning Constellation. You know, there's thoughts. Well, it's a $35 billion market cap company at this point. Is it too late? How do you guys think about that, Frank? I don't know if you've looked at that one.
Not too much. Like, I've read a lot of the Mark Leonard letters and stuff, and I'm one of the best capital allocators of all time by far. My question would be around the runway. It would have been interesting as a smaller company, obviously, because that runway was huge. I don't know how much they can maintain those kind of growth rates they have if they keep rolling up. I know they can kind of go into other industries and stuff as well, but yeah, my question would be around valuation and the runway, but I don't know the business or industry well enough to know.
I think what I heard too is, you know, the CEO there, he tends to be a buyer when he thinks, you know, it's underpriced. So that could be something to watch. Just look for that as a signal, you know, to maybe do more work when he starts buying again.
I'm just looking at these returns on the right hand side and wondering how long Chris Meyer has been holding these companies.
Because, well, I think he started his Woodlock House Family Capital in like 2019. So it hasn't been long.
Right.
Yeah.
But Evolution returns are insane. I did not realize.
Yeah.
How crazy that's been. That's another one that floats around on Twitter a lot.
Mm.
Now I know why, I guess.
Yeah.
Anything else on there that you've kind of looked into, Brad? Or
Copart a little bit. You know, the valuation is giving me pause at the moment. I think it's like 25 times EV to EBIT. If that got below 20, I could see putting some energy there. But that's really the only one I've kind of spent time kicking the tires on.
The funny thing about this is like we look like, oh boy, they've all had great run-ups, and it's like, all right, but are you too late now that it's, you know, have you missed all the growth? Because really think what you're kind of getting at. And that's the challenge. Hindsight's 2020 always.
Yeah, by the time they look great, it's often.
Yeah. By the time they're clearly great businesses, you miss that, like, you know, greatness payoff like immediately. Not that you still can't make nice returns, but the biggest of the biggest returns are when you can get in before people recognize the greatness, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's not like they're all a bunch of mega caps. Like, they're still relatively...
There's still room for sure.
It's hard to know, though. You're right.
But, you know, if your basis is, what's the highest? 49x lower, you know, that'll help you a lot more than starting now.
You kind of get that dilemma where you want a good track record, but if the track record's too good, you think you've missed out.
Yeah, right. It's a bias of some sort, but it makes some sense.
Yeah, it's really about, you know, what's the total addressable market, right? What's the TAM? What can the company grow into? And for something like Evolution, I don't know exactly what they make a product for casinos to have like an online.
Yeah, the software for some of the online game stuff. Yeah.
So, I mean, that could be huge. I don't know exactly what that TAM is. It's not a space I'm particularly interested in spending time, but.
So, yeah. This is one thing I like, experience. Just like, it's like the only thing that you can really do it is just knowing, like, okay, you know, what were people saying about insert X mega cap company 20 years ago? Were people like skeptical the entire time? I'm sure there's plenty of skeptics, short interests. And how easy it was to overlook at the time and trying to get over that bias when not everyone is all bought into it yet. Or the performance isn't that clear. That's the game, I guess. Just trying to, especially in value investing, which is contrarian, trying to go against the tide in many cases to try and get those deep value plays potentially, and find the great businesses before people truly understand that they're great. That's where the massive payoffs are. Easier said than done. Alexander here in the comments,
Alexander.
Makes a good comment. I think it was Buffett that said, you can be much later than you think, since they only bought Apple in 2016 and everyone knew it was a great business by then, which is fair enough. I'm not saying that you can't make nice returns. But, you know, imagine if they bought Apple 10 years before that or 15 years before that. Oh, maybe we're getting close to tech bubble there. So I don't know what that would look like. But, you know, having an extra decade in that company riding that compound wave, would have been big.
Well, I mean, Apple in 2016 was incredibly cheap. I think it was like 5x on an EV to EBIT basis. I think the story was, you know, this company has peaked. It's close to decline.
It's not like he didn't get a decent deal on it, but
right.
You know, it's not going to be, you know, a thousand bagger or anything, because there's only so high you can go. In real terms, at least.
Well,
I always want to qualify that with inflation, anything is possible, but in real terms.
Hopefully we don't see that kind of inflation.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, I don't think in 2016, everybody knew that Apple was a great business. That wasn't the narrative that was going on, at least. So it did take some kind of contrarian thinking. then to actually buy Apple, even though looking back, it's like, oh, it's so obvious.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't obvious.
Same problem on a smaller scale.
Yeah.
Yeah. Investors had really written off Apple in 2015, 16 as kind of just a hardware business that had reached its peak, but it was kind of those underlying software that I think most people were missing. And then the buybacks kind of started around that period and really ramped up thanks to Carl Icahn. And then I'm sure Buffett would have had some say in that as well. So it wasn't an obvious pick back then. No one was thinking Apple was the best company. Well, that Apple had a long runway at least. I think Buffett was pretty contrarian at that point.
Sure. Also,
it seems strange to say now.
Caesar in the chat says Buffett would be up 40,000% on Apple if he bought during the tech bubble. So he had some room. I wasn't sure how high it got. So I know with like Microsoft and Amazon, it took forever for them to recover, even as operating earnings and everything were growing substantially. But anyways, good for Apple.
Yeah, well, back then, I think it was 2016, I was looking at the magic formula and it was like top 25. And I'm just like,
really?
That's kind of weird.
Wow. Yeah, that is weird.
Must be a crappy business to be that high in the magic formula. Okay. Oops.
Staring people in the face and, yeah, you know, people were selling. Someone had to sell to Warren.
A lot of someones.
Yes. And I thought Tom would be here by now. I don't know what's going on. Yeah.
He's probably fishing. You know, he decided, I'll just go fishing.
It is earlier for him. So I know he does stuff before our shows. Oftentimes he's recorded his own podcast like immediately before the show a number of times before. That's got to be a long day. A lot of content. Any other potential ideas kind of that you guys, they've come across recently or things you might be looking for in the near future? Besides great deals, of course. Hey, Tom's in the chat. He says he's coming on.
Oh my gosh.
With an idea. Selling Heritage? ?
Wow.
You know, the only other thing that there are some banks that seem appealing. Again, I said Ally, but maybe Hingham would be something I could maybe increase depending how the situation plays out. I am hesitant as it's a situation that, in all honesty, I don't really understand well. I think there's a lot of people online that present their takes on both sides of the kind of macro situation, I guess, but I really don't know how it's going to play out in effect a regional bank like Hingham. The bet partly there would be on that management are so exceptional and have managed kind of every storm that's come their way that they do that again, which I don't know how comfortable I am to significantly put a position on that. But yeah, that's another one that's up the top of the list of companies that I'm following closely.
Makes sense. Go where the turmoil is.
Yeah. Alexander mentions Naked Wines. Can we pull up Naked Wines? I want to see how big of a beating it's taken recently. It's been really beaten up over the last year or so.
Yeah, I think that was a bit of a, well, I won't speak too soon, but the COVID hype with the kind of digital model for wines.
Right.
It kind of caught that trend and I think has.
Yeah. Yeah. You can see it right here.
As the share price shows.
Just shot up from 2020, peaked late 2021, just been a roller coaster down. Down 78% over the last year. Year to date, down 33%.
What's the
six market? Months? It's only down 5%.
So. What's the market cap now?
$79 million.
It's crazy.
Yeah,
We were talking about this quite some time ago. I wonder what the market cap was when we last talked about it.
A lot.
I remember looking into it at around 300-400 million. I felt like it was in the, it was significantly higher when I was looking into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, the punch card portfolio.
What about it?
Have we looked at it recently?
Oh no, I haven't. Tom's kind of the keeper. Tom's kind of the keeper of that.
Okay, we'll leave that up to Tom.
Someone mentioned PPBI in the chat. If you want to pull it up, I'm not sure what it is. Bar Hatcher asked me if I've looked at it.
PB Bancorp.
Yeah, not one I've looked at all.
Where is that based? Did they get a buyout?
Something happened.
And then it fell through.
Wait, so what do they do? Overview.
Connecticut.
Yeah, they were acquired by Centerville Bank. It operates as the holding company of Putnam Bank that provides various banking products.
Ooh, mortgage finance. That's a fun place to be.
Yeah, small cap bank in general is an interesting place to be.
Yeah, regional bank too. It's Connecticut in the U.S. Real estate loans. Oh, yeah, it's all real estate loans. It sounds kind of like Hingham in that sense. Local bank focusing on real estate loans.
Hey, guys, we got a super chat.
Yeah, he put a comment just under... Nathan
Malaysian ringgit.
That might be our second most commonly used currency on this channel is the ringgit.
Thanks, Aaron.
Aaron asks, does Hingham have many large deposits on their books? I understand that they have a wealthy customer base.
Yeah, I don't know what the average deposit kind of size is off the top of my head, but they do have a wealthy clientele. They kind of position themselves that way on purpose. You are right in saying that they have a wealthy customer base, but I don't know the kind of average size of their deposits. Me and Tom were actually going back and forth talking about this pretty recently. I guess if you look on the shareholder side of it, there is a lot of faith in the quality of the bank. So kind of the bank run kind of doesn't seem as scary from the shareholder side. And if that translates into how customers feel about the bank as well, then I guess that would be a good outlook for the bank. But I don't know well enough whether customers have that same kind of respect, I guess, towards the bank and management and everything else.
Oh, we might be talking about the wrong company here.
Hingham?
No, not Hingham. Hingham was correct. That bank corp is apparently a different one. It's PPBI, not PBBI or whatever I said. Here's this one.
Whoa.
PPBI, which is Pacific Premier Bank Corp. And is the holding company for Pacific Premier Bank. They do real estate loans, SBA loans, so business loans. So they do a lot more business loans, it seems, and actually it's just more credit products in general, auto loans as well. So it's not just the real estate like the others. 61 branches in Arizona, California, Nevada, Oregon, and Washington. Okay. Regional banks. This should have been the regional bank episode.
Yeah, I guess it again falls back to your outlook on the current situation and where you think this bank ends up and how much risk this bank has.
It's like the balance sheet, you got $1 billion in cash and equivalents. And I'd question what those equivalents are, as we've seen.
Yeah, hopefully not too much exposure to those long-dated bonds.
Yeah, long-dated, held to maturity, as they say. $17 billion in deposits, but only $1 billion in cash. Yeah, give me pause. Given what we just saw, I don't know what it is now. If they've, you know, short up the liquidity at all. Yeah, I don't know. Any thoughts?
Nope, I'm not a bank guy. That's my thought.
I'm not a bank guy either, but I'm more of a bank guy now than 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
We all are. Right. Speaking of bank guys. Our very own.
Is it happening?
Our very own.
Yes.
Tom.
Is in What's happening?
Tom, he's just here. Got back from fishing. Thanks for making time for us.
Yeah, I've got the fishing shirt on, but unfortunately, no fish in today. I was just a bit delayed in my afternoon plans, so apologies.
That happens when you have a baby that's, what, a month old?
Yeah, a month yesterday. Yes, that's right. Yeah, everything just moves a little slower when you want to go from spot A to spot B. So.
Yeah,
but we got there eventually.
You know,
I should say I was listening to the stream on the drive back though, so I'm fairly up to speed with what you guys are talking warmed about.
So now you can give us your best idea right now.
Well, it's been mentioned about 15 times on the stream, I think. I was going to pitch Hingham, to be perfectly honest, or at least revisit it.
Well, since you've heard what we've been saying, you know, what do you got to add?
Yeah, sure. So
we're on the outskirts.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I have kind of similar thoughts to Frank, where there's still a lot of uncertainty around how the, you know, the flow-on effects from Silicon Valley Bank and that sort of thing end up impacting someone like Hingham. I think there's a few important differences. So something I actually should have been aware of but wasn't aware of at all is that Hingham and a lot of Massachusetts banks, it seems, have kind of unusual insurance policies. So Hingham actually sent out an email to all their customers, and it was like top of their website. It's probably still on there at the moment if you went to just Hingham's homepage, if you were to sign up as a customer. But all of Hingham's deposits are insured up to any amount. So that's a rather unique attribute, I would say, amongst smaller banks. And I think that probably is quite a...
Who are they insured by? I'd question the insurer at that point.
Yeah, if you go to Hingham's website, I forget the name off the top of my head, but it's basically a local collection of Massachusetts banks. If you dig a little deeper, it seems like no depositors lost a penny since, I think it's like the 1930s or something through that insurance program. Is it a regulatory
thing or just how they do it?
Honestly, I haven't dug into the details.
I'd be curious because that does sound weird.
And I'm not sure if I'm wrong here, but I know they're insured up to any amount, like beyond the 250 or whatever the usual amount is, but I'm not sure it's every deposit. I think it's only a large fraction of the deposits that they have, but I'm not sure if it's all of them, but I could be wrong there.
Yeah, interesting. I thought it was all depositors, but could be wrong.
Well, that would explain why they have no cash on the balance sheet versus all the
deposits. What's that, Hangin?
Yep.
The other thing I was going to bring up is Hingham does have a reasonable chunk of their book value in an equity portfolio, so there's some extra access to liquidity.
Yeah, you have to have some liquidity somewhere. If that makes sense.
Yeah. I should say a lot of that equity portfolio, we don't know for sure. I'm not sure if Frank has any more info on this. They're not quite at the 13F threshold. I think it was close to $90 million at one point, and the equity portfolio was down a bit in 2022. So we don't know quite for sure what's in there. I have a feeling it's filled with a bunch of financial companies. So that may take a hit, you know, if things were going south in that sort of sector generally.
They have had commentary around it being mostly financial companies that they follow closely and take ideas from themselves. So I think it's pretty safe to say their portfolio has taken a pretty big hit.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. But I don't know. I think there's a couple of things on their side versus a lot of other regional banks in terms of preventing a bank run. That's the really scary overhang, I think, for some of these businesses.
That's good to know.
And you've got, I think it's just a fraction over 30% of the company owned by insiders. So I don't know. It's very important to the Gorgon family in particular to keep Hingham alive in any way they possibly can. And that's probably one of the reasons why it's been so conservatively managed on the asset side for a long time. They've had very low net charge-offs and so on. So,
yeah, and the insiders have an incredible track record as well. So I guess it partly comes back to trusting them that they've never really done anything stupid, and I don't think now would be a time for that to change.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Given the current situation, there's some risk to this thing, of course. It's the type of situation where if there's no bank run, they'll be completely fine, and if there is, it probably goes to zero. That's just how financials tend to work.
I was going to say that's kind of all of them, unless they're bailed out.
Exactly. But I don't know. That if there was any bank in the country that's going to be well managed through this and has some things on their side on the deposit insurance front, it's probably something like Hingham or maybe one of the large banks. It seems like anecdotally, at least, there's been a few. There's been a lot of deposits flowing into the likes of Bank of America and so on, but I guess we'll get data on that as quarterly filings and stuff come out. I think Hingham have their shareholder meeting coming up in the next few weeks as well, so that'll be quite interesting. It's a very mini Berkshire-style sort of Q&A session with management, so I imagine they'll get a lot of questions on this type of stuff.
Well, it is nice to see so much skin in the game. Did you say 30% insider ownership?
30%, yeah.
Do you have any sense for how much, the equity holdings compare in value to salary?
Yeah, I think it's many, many multiples, but I can probably find this if you give me a few seconds, because I was putting this together the other day. So the Gorgon family is the main family that's involved with Hingham. The dad, who I think is Robert Gorgon. Does that sound right to you, Frank?
Robert Jr.
Robert Gorgon Jr. I think that's right. Yeah. So him and so he originally sort of took over running Hingham in the mid 90s. His son Patrick Gorgon is now running the ship, and then the sort of main Gorgon family shareholding is split between the father, the son, and who I think is Patrick's, the current CEO's sister. The three of them, I think, own about 15% of the bank. You then have an uncle who owns 1%, so that's about $5 million.
Can we just hit that ownership tab, Jack, real quick?
A whole bunch of directors as well.
Yeah, I did, but shows the largest is in all these. Mostly these companies.
Yeah, I'm not sure why the Gorgon family don't show up on there, but I checked a couple of days ago. It's definitely in their latest proxy. It adds up to a little north of 30%.
Renaissance Technologies is in there.
Interesting. Yeah, so I think, again, I'd have to check the proxy, but I think Patrick Gorgon as a CEO's salary is in the range of $1 to $2 million a year. That Gorgon family stake split between the father, the son, and I think the sister is worth about a little over $80 million currently. So, yeah, that's the setup.
Cool. I'm guessing Renaissance shows up in most public companies in the U.S.
Here and there.
They got to put that money somewhere, right?
Yeah. Well, once a quarter – or one quarter per year, at least, you'll be held. Renaissance Technologies, right?
Yeah.
All right. Tried and true, right?
Yeah, it's an idea. I mean, it's like you guys said at the start, not necessarily a best one, but to be honest, I haven't been looking at very many new stocks at all. It's been looking at a lot of existing stuff, really. Prices have been swinging around a bit, so. Mm-hmm.
Like SRG, huh?
Oh, boy.
Yes, exactly like SRG.
That should be the teaser for next week. I think we got to do an SRG episode very soon. Lots of drama.
Yes, yeah. And it's in the punch card portfolio still as well. So.
Oh, no.
Those assets under management just continue to fall. What are we going to do?
Yeah, have you guys listened to the podcast? I assume that's what you're referencing here.
I haven't actually listened to it, but I know at least some things yet. But it's on my list to listen to this weekend.
Same. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
You gave us a sneak preview.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'd be keen to hear you guys' thoughts next week. Yeah. Because there's definitely a lot of people still on both sides of the argument here. So
yeah. I think it's worth doing a Tom, I pitched we could go in and value their remaining 76 buildings or whatever they got left as of, I think, today, based on who's the guy on Twitter who's like updating everyone as stuff falls off the website.
David, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. They're down to 76 buildings. It'd be an interesting exercise at this point because it's a lot more manageable than the however many buildings it was before. It was crazy.
Yeah, given the current cap rates, right?
Yeah, you need a good market update.
What are you seeing in your are you seeing any crazy valuation changes in your day job, Jack, with some of the deals you work on?
So the thing is, I can't really comment much on valuations because I don't see like the operating statements. I'll see the contract, you know, saying what they're buying it for. So I'm rarely going to see the actual, you know, rent roll. It's funny, you guys just took a sip of water at the exact same time. I was looking at Tom. But anyway, I'm not sure how much valuations are changing, like for the deals I'm working on. The volume is definitely slowing. And we're seeing that all over the place. So we might be in that sort of kind of limbo moment where buyers are wanting a discount and then sellers are wanting, you know, hey, look at the comps from 3 months ago or from a year ago. But, you know, yeah, are those comps really valid anymore? So I think we're kind of in that limbo moment. Well, to see who blinks first, perhaps. And of course, who knows what happens with another bailout or some whatever happens with rates, given the banking situation, that could always throw a wrench in things. And anyways, just slowing volume is the biggest observation. Can't really say much about valuations though, from the stuff I'm doing.
How about farm valuations, Brad?
Any move? they're not coming down, man.
No, not in Nashville.
Yeah.
Dang.
There's still an inflow of people here.
Right. So, is that one of the areas there's a lot of net migration?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Interesting.
We're like a climate refuge here.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. Don't tell me.
I know in our in the New Zealand real estate market, things are starting to get warmed up in terms of the price declines. I think it's probably similar in Australia. I'm not sure if you've seen much of that yet, Frank.
Things are getting warmed up? You mean they're cooling down? What do you mean?
The cooling is getting warmed. Yeah, I don't know. They're going down.
I was confused. I thought it was ramping up. Yeah. Like, dang.
Yeah, the dumpster fire is warming up. I don't know. Maybe something like that.
I don't know what New Zealand's prices were like in comparison to Australia's, but I think Australia was significantly in a worse position than the US. At least if you're looking at kind of average income versus the median kind of house price or some kind of metric of your choice, I think we're about on par with Canada as being one of the most expensive Western kind of countries. Ours have sold off by give or take, say, 10% in some of the major cities, but there's still parts of Australia, including where I live, where prices have been pretty much flat. So there is some delay depending on where you are, but where things were the worst, which was pretty much Sydney, and I guess Melbourne and some of the other major cities, but those two in particular, they have sold off. So I would argue there's a long way to go, or at least should be a long way to go before anything becomes affordable at least. But yeah, that's all speculation.
Yeah. It seems like I've seen a little bit of it in New Zealand, but it seems like in Australia, you guys are just starting to get the news articles about, you know, some guy who's just levered to the hills for the past like really short period of time to buy like 10 rental properties. And now is it a little bit of trouble?
That's Airbnb people here in the US.
Yeah.
Australia,
I see that play out.
We have a pretty unique situation where our fixed loans, fixed interest rates, typically are 5 years, 3 to 5 years is about all you get for your mortgage. And all of those kind of boom buyers during COVID, those fixed rates are about to fall off, and where they're paying probably 2 or 3%, they're soon to be paying 6%. So they're going to be hit with reality really quickly, which will change the market dramatically. So that's kind of the news trends over here is This is the year and next year where all of those interest rates change over to variable and reality sinks in.
Yeah, almost identical over here. Like, I think we have floating rates in the high sevens now, and we have, I think all the fixed term rates are somewhere in the sixes from 1 to 5 years. The latest, I guess it's Real Estate Institute in New Zealand, this stands for, like house price stats just came out. This is for February, and I think these are about 60 days delayed as well, just with settling times and stuff. But New Zealand wide, we're down 16% from the peak. Auckland is down 21.6%, and Wellington down 22.9%.
Wow.
Yeah. So if someone's just bought three rental properties in Wellington over the past few years,
levered up.
That equity's starting
to underwater.
You
mark it on your balance sheet as a held to maturity piece of real estate and don't change the value. And then it looks like you have plenty of equity right there.
Exactly.
Just don't change the value.
I should say, like, so Wellington's down the most, 22.9% from peak. The 5-year return annualized is still 6.1%. So, you know, there was a massive run up over the past couple of years, and it's coming down. But if you've held for 5 years, you've still made mid single digits annualized. So for now.
So Tom, Jason says, Tom's here, a little more walking around money. This is in reference to Seritage.
I saw it earlier. I tell you, I was listening in. Thank you. Thank you, Jason.
Wow. All right. Any final thoughts? I saw someone ask what our day jobs were. For anyone who doesn't know, Learn, Earn, Invest is Puncher Group Curious. What are all your day jobs? So you can close on that.
You go first, Jack.
I'm an attorney and now a carpet cleaner. I own a carpet cleaning business here in Houston. That's my side gig. And then I'm a commercial real estate attorney by day.
There you go.
Next.
Brad?
I do landscaping. So like sustainable kind of landscaping stuff.
I thought you were going to say international man of mystery or something.
Well, there is that element as well, but I can't talk about that.
Okay.
Karen's like, I'm the emir of Dubai.
Yeah, we'll have to hit him up with that question next time.
What's your day job? I just own the place. Tom?
I work for an agricultural software business. I've been doing that the last 6 years or so. Got an agricultural science degree. That's kind of my background.
And I'm a teacher in like a curriculum type role.
Fun stuff. And we're all semi-professional YouTubers as well.
I'm far from that these days.
Semi-professional. You make a few dollars from these streams.
Yeah. Should we disclose how profitable PunchCard was, just for full transparency?
Oh, yeah.
Last year? I know,
yeah,
Jack, you just sent me my, what is it, the K-1?
K-1. It says our partnership return in the U.S.
Yes.
Because it's a pass-through. So you get to pass through the gains or the losses to your personal taxes.
Should we give people a couple of minutes just to guess how much money they think PunchCard
would sure. Let them do it. Let me pull up
in the chat.
It'd be interesting to get people's perspectives.
Including all the super chats.
Yes, everything. And what do we have on the expenses front for a bit of context, Jack? It's basically just
I'll turn this back to a quick note from Views on Ally Financial. If you just rewind a little bit, we went over it at least somewhat. Actually, towards the beginning of the show, we kind of let off with some Ally talk. But thank you for the super chat. And then we also got one from our man, Jonathan. Carvana money for Jason, a little shade being thrown
we're
in
not,
the chat.
We're not passing that along to Jason.
Yeah, that's all ours. So we appreciate it. All right. So we got some guesses here. We have -5,000.
Yikes.
I appreciate you thinking we're such a high budget operation, but okay. Yeah. We got 250,000. -20%. We did not invest any money into this. or I guess I got it rolling with like a couple hundred bucks of StreamYard fees for a while. But
what's our growth CapEx?
Yeah, give us owner earnings.
Yeah, what's our ROIC? I'm in the wrong account here that has the accounting. There we go. Okay. No, there's also the wrong one.
The ROIC's too low. We should all be leasing our computers or something.
That's right.
Juice those numbers up.
More write-offs. And all right, I got the numbers.
What should we do for the winner?
So we got 258.63, 500. Luis with $2 super chat put us in the green. Appreciate it.
You got to add that, Jack. Add that to the figures.
And well, this is last year. So for 2022, okay, top line, we made $1,782.01. So that was top line revenue. Now we get to expenses.
Was that higher than
Jack?
Well, we have expenses. Yeah,
we do.
Jack, have we've got a lot of international viewers. Is this? Are we talking? are we talking Japanese yen?
Malaysians
in US dollars.
This is
US dollars.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
And then expenses was $1,258.43, leaving us with a net profit of $523.58, which was split equally among the five of us, and we all have to pay taxes on that. So that is what we made in 2022 on this humble stream. I think the vast majority of our expenses went to StreamYard, and also now Buzzsprout to keep the podcast version of this going. So
that's too much profit, man. Amazon would never do that. We've got to reinvest.
Yeah, reinvest in the warehouses, and we can get going.
Yeah, we need to. How can we share these scale economies with the people?
Maybe we should introduce an AI stream, an automatic, like AI host of some sort. Just take me out of it. Have someone else host it. It's an AI bot. That's how we revolutionize, for sure. Disrupt.
Then I actually thought that's what we were currently doing. Isn't Jack out cleaning carpets or something?
We have to go public via SPAC as well. And don't forget about that. We're getting that ready to go.
Yes.
Beautiful.
So there you go. Those are the numbers for 2022.
There you have it.
Just filed those taxes.
Okay. It's sort of hourly rate.
It costs like $150 just to file the business taxes, which is like 10% of our revenue.
Whoa. Like, GG, Luigi, PG.
Hey, that 1,000 yen.
Yes.
Appreciate it. From Brad's favorite name.
Yes, nice. Absolutely.
We also had to pay the voiceover guy this year. That would have been one of the expenses, I suppose.
Oh,
where was that? That was like $50, I think. It really wasn't that much. I'm trying to find it.
Don't let him hear you say that. What if we need future work from the guy?
So
hey, it's all publicly priced.
You guys, Eunice thinks we should hire Jason to be our fluffer.
As our warm-up guy? You mean warm-up like our guy. our intro guy, you mean? Intro man? I mean,
take
intro
man.
Intro man's very...
Jack's our warm-up guy, and we can't
he
do
is
that
our warm-up Jack. Guy, yeah.
Oh, if you mean
he's
like...
the best intros in the game come from Mr. Jack Duffley.
I don't know, best intro is intro man. I don't do the intro. I take the next step after the intro. Intro man's like rock steady. Like, he never misses. So, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. A little known fact is that Intro Man's legal name is actually Intro Man as well.
Yeah. So. Intro Man is what he also goes by, but it's Intro Man, depending on where you're from.
Yes.
Yeah. He puts in work. He produces. Yeah. Great employee.
Remarkably consistent week to week.
With that said, we should probably let him take us out.
Let's let him take us out.
And
the outro guy. We need. Is it a different outro guy?
No, it's okay. Same guy. That's his nickname. Outro guy. And his actual name is Intro Man. Before we get to him, just have to remind all you friendly people: go ahead and smash that like button. smash the subscribe button, more importantly, so you don't miss next week's episode. And check out all the great stuff in the description below. We got discount links to ShareSite. We got another discount link to Seeking Alpha. You can get a discount. Like, I mean, what more could you ask for? You can also get the free version as well if you want to try it out, using our link, of course, because if you eventually end up switching to a premium plan, we get a nice commission there. So, and you saw the numbers. Like, we're trying to grow here. We're trying to disrupt. So with that said, we'll see everyone next time.
Thanks for tuning in to Punch Card Investing. The contents of this show should not be used as investment advice or as a recommendation to invest in a particular security. Please consult with a licensed investment advisor if you need investment advice. All investments carry risk and the potential for monetary loss. Thank you, and see you next week.